Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 25th, 2022. Heavy rainfall brings some relief and flooding amidst extreme drought. By Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County Region. Last month, large swaths of Presidio and Brewster counties were declared to be under exceptional drought, the highest category on the U.S. Drought Monitor, a continuation of the troubling trend that had persisted through the year. The Rio Grande's Santa Elena Canyon had dried up in the spring. Further north in Presidio County, the bone-dry terrain led the Marfa fire chief to warn residents of extreme wildfire conditions. But a recent wave of rainfall has turned much of the land from arid and lifeless to a vibrant green. Currently, the drought monitor shows Presidio and Brewster counties, previously either under exceptional or extreme drought, brought down to a mix of extreme and severe drought, a notable step down. Over the weekend, the banks of the Rio Grande overflowed in Presidio County, and the water was high and fast enough to facilitate river runners. Flooding overtook parts of the county, including in Big Bend Ranch State Park. "We have flooding right now, mostly in our arroyos," said Ranger Laura Jennings of the Big Bend Ranch State Park on Tuesday. "So the river is up pretty high right now." Jennings said the park has seen an uptick in day use for river permits, a telltale sign that the Rio Grande has bounced back, if only temporarily. The flooding that accompanied the river's rise, meanwhile, led to campground roads being washed out. "We don't do a lot of advertising to bring people into the park in the monsoon season," said Jennings. "We want to make sure people are enjoying their vacation and not getting their vehicle trapped or getting trapped in an arroyo for several days." But the heavy rainfall that has revived the river this past week is not exclusively due to the region's annual monsoon season, which generally kicks off around August or September, according to Julie Phillipson, a meteorologist with the Midland Office of the National Weather Service. "Recent rain activity is actually a byproduct of a tropical storm in South Texas that moved up through the Rio Grande Valley, plus a recent cold front," she explained. "An additional storm that formed in Mexico contributed to recent flooding in Presidio. It is partially attributed to the monsoon, but there are a lot of different factors involved," said Phillipson. Phillipson added that the varied terrain of the Big Bend region primes it for flooding in some areas. "The complex terrain down there, the mountains and the canyons, the arroyos and the river valley, there's a lot that can cause flooding problems in normally dry creeks," she said. "Rain could fall miles away over the mountains, then it runs down those creeks and canyons and arroyos and can cause flooding miles away." On Wednesday, the National Weather Service issued flood warnings for the Rio Grande from Presidio to Boquillas. And while rain chances could decrease over the weekend, they may pick up again next week, leading to yet more flooding. "The precipitation is a welcome relief from exceptional drought conditions," said Phillipson, "but the drought is by no means over." "Droughts aren't unusual, but the longevity of this drought is one of the worst droughts that we've had since 2011, and the precipitation is definitely going to help provide a little bit of reprieve from the drought that we're in, she said, but it's still going to take a lot of rainfall to recover. There's still replenishing the lakes and aquifers. That will take more precipitation, but this will definitely help in the short term. Jennings said she and the rest of the park staff have been enjoying the effects of the rainfall. Avid birders with the park have been pointing out the emergence of new species. Monsoon clouds make the colors along the river road pop, and there is some relief to knowing the wildlife will benefit. It's encouraging, especially after the river's been so low, to know the critters aren't as stressed out and to know we're getting some recharge in our backcountry, said Jennings. I'm really grateful everyone's getting a second wind. Construction on Presidio International Bridge stalled again, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio, after what seemed like positive momentum earlier in the summer, construction on the Presidio International Bridge has been stalled yet again, this time pending a signed agreement from Mexico. Governor Greg Abbott signed off on the project in April, and in June, officials on this side of the border were hopeful that construction would pick back up by July. Right now, it's in a holding pattern. State Senator Cesar Blanco told the Big Bend Sentinel last week while touring the Big Bend region. We're waiting to hear from Mexico. There's got to be a federal agreement that's approved on both sides, so we're holding up on that. The senator went on to say that the status of the bridge construction is a top concern among his Presidio County constituents. Locals were frustrated earlier this year by what seemed to be a delay on behalf of the governor's office. Because the American side of the bridge is owned by TxDOT and the Mexican side is administered by an agency known as CAPUFE, C-A-P-U-F-E, any construction requires cooperation between the state of Texas and the Mexican government. The process entails the drafting and signing of a document called a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, in accordance with the Texas Government Code. The project entails constructing a parallel two-lane bridge structure for traffic headed into Mexico, located upstream of the existing bridge. The purpose of the project is to improve mobility by preventing the disruption of southbound traffic during large cargo crossings, a representative with State Senator Cesar Blanco's office explained to Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara in an email dated August 17th. Additionally, the project is intended to improve pedestrian safety and mobility. Construction has been stalled since 2020, and there have been a number of fits and starts to the American side of the project. As of March, the Mexican government had substantially completed their half, per Presidio Mayor John Ferguson. The delays now may be due to broader tensions between the two countries. I call the bridge a political hammer, Presidio International Port Authority Executive Director Jake Giesbrecht explained to the Presidio City Council on August 18. The Memorandum of Understanding languished on Governor Abbott's desk for months, and in that time, some of the government officials involved in drafting the MOU are no longer in office. Currently, American officials are awaiting signatures from Mexico's Secretary of Communications and Transportation, SCT. They wanted some different language, but once he signs that, we can go ahead, Giesbrecht explained. They're thinking it'll be less than 30 days from that signature. We have to dot some I's and cross some T's. Democratic candidate for Texas Railroad Commission scuffs up his boots in the Big Bend. by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. Last Thursday, Democratic candidate for Texas Railroad Commission, Luke Warford, held a town hall-style campaign event at Planet Marfa. Presidio County Commissioner Precinct 4 candidate David Beebe gave opening remarks and picked up the bar tab, offering Marfa residents a chance to learn more about the Railroad Commission and Warford's campaign. At 33 years old, Warford is the youngest candidate on the ballot this November and the youngest to run as a Democrat for a statewide office in over 30 years. The hundreds of deaths caused by widespread grid failure during Winter Storm Uri in 2021 inspired him to run for office. The Texas Railroad Commission could have prevented what happened last February, he said. Back in 2011, a winter storm cut out the lights for over 4 million Texans. Multiple outside investigations were launched into these widespread grid failures, and Texas energy providers were given a set of weatherization recommendations. It was the Railroad Commission's job to make those rules and enforce them, Warford explained. They didn't do it, whether out of corruption or incompetence. Warford has hit the campaign trail via train to spread the message that, despite its name, the Texas Railroad Commission hasn't had anything to do with the railroad for almost a century. The state agency was originally started in 1891 to prevent railroad monopolies from forming, and when the oil and gas industry took off in the early 20th century, the commission's duties shifted to serving the same function for the state's energy producers. In its contemporary form, the Railroad Commission has a much wider set of responsibilities. Despite being misnamed, the Texas Railroad Commission actually regulates the Texas oil and gas industry. That makes it one of the most important elected offices in the state for our economy, for our environment, and for our ability to keep the lights on, Warford explained to the crowd. There have been numerous attempts from both sides of the aisle to change the Texas Railroad Commission's title, most recently in 2015's legislative session. Such proposals were victims of a mix of nostalgia and concerns about unintended consequences, per the Texas Tribune. Warford thought the failure of these proposals was intended to keep the actual business of the Railroad Commission out of the public eye. Literally, there are people benefiting from the confusion, he said. This spring, Warford ran unopposed in the Democratic primary. The Republican primary was more eventful than usual this year. Candidate Marvin Summers was killed in a car crash just before Election Day and still took home 12% of the vote. Sarah Stagner, an oil and gas attorney, posed mostly nude for a campaign ad that won her a runoff against incumbent Wayne Christian. In November, Warford will be facing off against Christian, a Grammy-nominated gospel singer and former state lawmaker who has served on the Railroad Commission since 2016. Warford decided to stop in Marfa on his way to the Permian Basin, even though the region's voter base isn't that large. I'm a campaign everywhere kind of person, he told the Big Bend Sentinel. Marfa residents were appreciative of the effort and engaged in a lively back and forth. Local architect Liliana Fields posed an interesting question ahead of Warford's campaign stops in the Permian Basin. How was Warford planning to appeal to voters in the oil and gas industry while sticking to his values, namely regulating the oil and gas industry? The candidate's answer tied into a larger criticism of his own party. One of the things that frustrates me about Democrats is that we've let the Republicans create this false pro-oil and gas narrative. We as Democrats end up being portrayed as against an industry that employs thousands of people, he explained. He pointed out that top climate scientists urging the public toward measures like electric vehicles and solar panels acknowledge that the oil and gas industry won't become obsolete overnight. The question on the oil and gas industry is how do we make it cleaner and safer, he said. Warford was also vehemently opposed to the industry's use of eminent domain to secure land for pipeline construction. During the construction of the controversial Trans-Pecos pipeline in 2015, the issue of eminent domain became a hot topic in the region on both sides of the border. We shouldn't steal people's land and give it to major corporations and billionaires, Warford said. Despite the, as Warford puts it, reputation problem his party has among folks in the oil and gas industry, he was excited to be running on the same ticket as Beto O'Rourke and other energized, high-profile Democrats. We have genuinely the strongest statewide ticket that we have had in decades, and this fall, we're going to win, he said. The only pushback faced by Warford on this leg of the campaign trail was a comment by Fields. How could he expect to appeal to West Texans in well-oiled, out-of-the-box cowboy boots? Warford took the criticism in stride. I mean, I live in the city, and these are city boots. Though Warford's opponent doesn't have a planned campaign stop in the Big Bend yet, he sent a brief statement to the Big Bend Sentinel. It has been the honor of my life to serve as our state's 50th Railroad Commissioner, Christian wrote. If reelected, I look forward to continue fighting for cheap, plentiful, and reliable energy for all Texans. I will fiercely defend against the Biden administration's efforts to shut down oil and gas production in Texas, which would kill jobs, harm our economy, increase costs to consumers, and reduce the reliability of our grid. Oil and gas production and a clean environment are not mutually exclusive, and we must continue to preserve Big Bend and our state's numerous ecological treasures. Newly formed committee works to obtain funding for water infrastructure projects across Presidio County by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. A newly formed steering committee made up of representatives from the county, cities of Presidio and Marfa, unincorporated communities, organizations, and consultants is working to solicit government funding for water and wastewater infrastructure projects spanning Presidio County over the next 5 years. The potential projects, which range from bringing water and wastewater services to Las Pampas Colonia outside of Presidio to groundwater modeling of the West Texas Bolsons Aquifer, could be made possible by state revolving funds or forgivable loans administered by the Texas Water Development Board, TWDB. On the federal level, funding for such initiatives stems from the recent passing of the American Rescue Plan Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. Trey Gerfers, who is heading up the committee and also serves as board chairman of the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District, believes the group, which began meeting last month, is well-positioned to take advantage of these funding opportunities. This is partly because it is seeking funds for projects that would have wide-reaching regional impact, Gerfers explains. For example, the county's top priority would involve bringing water and wastewater services to the Presidio Airport, Industrial Park, and Las Pampas, which could have significant economic impact on a widespread area. It's paving the way toward making these projects more attractive to the State Revolving Fund and the Texas Water Development Board, where they can see that they're going to get more bang for their buck if they fund this rather than just these discrete projects of everybody kind of looking out for themselves, said Gerfers. To increase its odds, the committee is working with an experienced grant writer and is receiving guidance from established national nonprofits such as Water Finance Exchange, WFX, and the Environmental Defense Fund, EDF. Gerfers hopes that the federal government's recent focus on supporting infrastructure initiatives in underserved low-income communities will also give the region a sorely needed leg up. So often this kind of funding is announced and there's a deadline to apply for it, but in places like Presidio, Marfa, and Presidio County, we just don't have the staff. We don't have the capacity to understand those rules, understand all the ins and outs, and apply for it, said Gerfers. Rogelio Rodriguez, director of the Texas Infrastructure Fund with Water Finance Exchange, whose organization is assisting as project facilitators for the county, helping demystify the funding process and give applications a competitive edge, said rural communities do tend to lose out on these funding opportunities, but Presidio County's newfound regional approach and diversity of projects should make them more appealing to funders. That's part of why we and the EDF got involved, so we can help them put together these applications. Because the will is there, the desire is there, the need is there. It's just a matter of how you approach it, said Rodriguez. Communities get funded all the time, and with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act money, I think there's even more of an opportunity for communities like Presidio County to get funded. We're very hopeful. In order to further their cause in the eyes of potential funders, Presidio County and the cities of Marfa and Presidio recently adopted a resolution committing to participate in the steering committee and actively work toward meeting its goals, from more green infrastructure to creating jobs to better understanding water resources, regardless of who holds local public office. Gerfers said the committee submitted a preliminary list of projects this past March, which have now been scored by the TWDB, and they expect to be invited back to submit more detailed proposals soon. Funding could be seen by the end of 2022, he said. The committee, while robustly represented by city and county officials, could use greater input from citizens in the unincorporated communities of Ruidosa and Candelaria, he said. So far, priority projects the committee has outlined are for Marfa to address the long-standing failure of the sewer system on the Tenati Foundation, previously Fort D.A. Russell, and Officers Row properties, for which the city received a violation from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality back in 2020. The committee would also like to see water and wastewater services brought to the East Heights area, where lots don't meet the special requirements needed to drill wells. The city of Presidio is looking to upgrade valve systems within their water utility. Redford has prioritized repairing a levee that was destroyed in a 2008 flood in order to improve its acequias, irrigation systems that were once used to help grow fruit and nut trees that also provided valuable shade. Candelaria could see the area of Pinto Canyon Road that is subject to flooding fixed, and Shafter is assessing the idea of establishing a water supply independent of the Rio Grande Mining Company. Shafter residents were left without water for an extended time period after a pump house fire this fall. The Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District has prioritized projects to increase monitoring of water levels and water quality in order to further assess the overall health of water resources, said Gerfers. Where it gets interesting for us is, how do you integrate all of this, your pipes and your pumps, and your jobs and your economic development, with a greater understanding of aquifer health and watershed enhancement or restoration, said Gerfers. The Groundwater District currently operates 7 monitoring wells, which have only been up and running for a few years. By establishing more monitoring wells through drilling its own or seeking partnerships with cooperative landowners, the district will be able to gather multiple data points a year and build a data set over time, which will allow for a greater understanding of the igneous and West Texas Basin aquifers. Data could then be fed into a potential groundwater model of the Balsonis. Gerfer said that these studies will be useful resources as the county prepares for future challenges in the face of climate change. There's not going to be any getting around drought. There's not going to be any getting around wildfires. It's coming. The best way to protect ourselves is to get ready and to build the most possible resilience into our systems, said Gerfers. Rodriguez said the need for increased monitoring efforts relates back to the county's regional approach, as everyone is utilizing the same water sources, and it is important to keep tabs on how economic activities and growth are affecting natural resources. It's important that we have data and monitoring to be able to gauge the impact of all the activities on that same water source for the different communities so they can be aware, they can plan, they can have sustainable efforts to make sure that their water sources are long-lasting, said Rodriguez. The district will also seek funding for rainwater catchment systems, tree planting initiatives, and farm pots, devices which ensure remote cattle ranching pumps are shutting off properly. Gerfer said while citizens will opt into the new water services and will be forced to participate, he hopes the community realizes that paying into city utilities helps create strong systems that benefit everyone in the long run. We need to be viewing our role as being investors in our infrastructure. The rates that we pay, the bills that we pay, those are investments in that system and its maintenance, said Gerfers. It's only through those systems that our communities are going to survive out here.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, August 25th, 2022. Bond election called by school board. The Fort Stockton Independent School District bond Proposition A was 10 votes away from passing in May, failing 665 to 656 during an election that had 18% of registered voters participate. Now, the Fort Stockton ISD School Board is moving forward with a second bond election that includes the same $84 million proposition. The school board approved the order of a bond election for 2 propositions at a special meeting on October 17th, 5 days before the August 22nd deadline. The election will be held on November 8th, the date for the general statewide and local election. I think we have to go for it. We have to continue fighting for our kids. If we didn't do enough last time, we're going to do double or triple the efforts, and we'll stay positive regardless of how much negativity comes our way, said ISD Superintendent Dr. Zamora before the school board vote, with the tax rate language at the ballot box being one of the primary reasons for the failure of 4 bond propositions this past May. Zamora emphasized that the bond money, if passed, would be taken out of in a manner that would not increase the tax rate. We want everyone to understand that we're staggering the monies. It's not just they're going to get $84 million. We're going to get what we can to maintain the tax rate the same. We're going to do to whatever we have to do to keep that tax rate the same or lower it, possibly. Board member Anastasio Dominguez noted that on Wednesday's special board meeting, the money would benefit all students at Fort Stockton ISD. One of the things on Proposition A, it's going to cover all campuses. Board President Billy Espino added his support for having it on the November ballot. It's something we need to do. It's not going to get any better. It's not going to take care of itself. Proposition B, titled Stadium Complex, has a $16 million limit and is similar to the same proposition on the ballot this past May, which had a $12 million limit. Jeremy Hickman, first-year ISD athletic director and football coach, said Wednesday's meeting that female athletes would largely benefit from the upgrades if the bond were to pass. We want to upgrade and put an emphasis on getting things to the level they need to be, but also really put my foot forward for our female athletes, for not only the next couple of years, but for generations. Below is a summary of the propositions as stated in the special school board meeting. The Proposition A, the issuance of up to $84 million in bonds by the Fort Stockton Independent School District for school facilities, including but not limited to district-wide safety and security upgrades, renovations to all campuses, construction of a new intermediate classroom wing, improvements of the CTE facilities, and updates to the transportation fleet. Proposition B, the issuance of up to $16 million in bonds by the Fort Stockton Independent School District for school stadium facilities, including new turf, a new field house, renovation of the 55-year-old field house, and upgrades to the track, with priority given to additional facilities for female athletes. Pursuit leads to arrest in Fort Stockton. A call for trespassing in Fort Stockton ended with a pursuit and arrest of a former resident of the city on August 19th. Andres Garcia, 37, was arrested on 8 charges, including 3 counts of aggravated assault against a public servant following a pursuit by law enforcement. The Fort Stockton Police Department received a report of trespassing at 10 o'clock p.m. and arrived at the residence where Garcia had fled. A pursuit by the police department ensued in the city, which included Garcia traveling westbound in eastbound lanes on Interstate 10. There was a report of him on the interstate driving on the wrong side of the road against traffic. He was going westbound on the eastbound side. 2 18-wheelers had to avoid him. Then he exited from Front Street. Garcia then arrived at his sister's house on Gillis Street and attempted to evade law enforcement on foot for over a block before being arrested and taken into custody. The guy abandoned his car at his sister's and he ran down the road and ended up on the railroad and 2nd Street. There was an officer and deputy given chase there. They both deployed their tasers. The pursuit ended at approximately 10:30, according to Lujan. During the pursuit, Garcia damaged 2 law enforcement vehicles with minor collisions. No one was reported to be injured in the accident. Garcia received bonds of totaling $240,000 and is still in jail, according to the Pecos County Sheriff's Office. Garcia, who was living out of the Super 8 Motel in Fort Stockton 2 months ago, according to an arrest report, was previously arrested on June 23rd for resisting arrest, search, or transport. Petition approval begins hospital district opportunity. The ball began to officially roll towards a hospital district election in Pecos County on Tuesday following a special meeting of the hospital board. The board met on August 23rd and decided to move forward with the process of starting a petition in order to set a hospital district election into motion. Fletcher Brown, attorney with Walter Lansden, Dorch, and Davis, attended the meeting and presented the procedural steps in order to get to an election and answered questions the board had regarding the change to a district if an election were to pass. Brown, who has been recognized as the best lawyers in American publication since 2013 for his high-caliber work in healthcare law, stated that the first step to hold a hospital district election will be to get 100 signatures on a petition before taking it to the county clerk for verification. Signatures must come from registered voters that live inside the proposed hospital district boundaries. It has to have at least 100 signatures, and they have to be qualified. The petition has to have the name of the district boundary of the district, the boundary of the district, and we've got to have the legal definition of that. You also have to state the maximum tax rate in the petition. The boundaries of the proposed district will consist of Pecos County, including the Ira Ann Hospital District. Temporary directors, which will consist of current hospital board members per discussion at Tuesday's meeting, will also be listed on the petition. The PCMH board decided on 5 directors instead of 7 following a recommendation by Pecos County Judge Schuster and an explanation from Brown. Directors will be broken up by the county's 4 precincts and 1 at-large position. It was determined at the meeting that the board had members who lived in each of the 4 precincts. If the election does pass, directors would be decided by vote in the May 2023 election. Brown stated that he will finalize the petition by the end of this week and send Pecos County Memorial Hospital the forms and required paperwork to go along with the petition by the end of next week. The board and Schuster determined that December 10th is the target election date for the hospital district. In order for the election to happen by December 10th, the Pecos County Commissioners will need to hold a public hearing at a special or regular meeting after 100 signatures are verified. The approval of the election order by the county commissioners will need to happen at least 62 days before the proposed election date, which would be October 11th. If the election order is approved for a December 10th election day, early voting would begin on November 28th. See future editions of the Pioneer and the Pioneer website for additional information regarding the potential creation of a hospital district and the impact it would have for residents inside the proposed district's boundary. Fort Stockton native saves life in fire. Brian Garcia, 18, saved the life of an Odessa woman during a mobile home fire on August 13th. The courageous Fort Stockton native who recently moved to Odessa was quick to respond to the panicked screams coming from within the burning home. "I didn't think twice," he explained. "I saw the mobile home on fire and reacted instantly. I was breaking down doors and windows trying to get inside. Once I got in there, I couldn't see anything. It was pitch black. I couldn't see anything because of all the smoke. I was just feeling my way around. Then I found the lady, and I was able to pull her out. The survivor was the mother of Azaria Williams, an infant who unfortunately did not survive the tragedy. I wish I could have done more," he said. "The woman didn't get burned, and I'm sure she had a lot of smoke in her lungs because I did. I never once thought about myself or getting burned or if I would make it out of them of there alive. I just heard screams and ran inside." Garcia has lived in Fort Stockton his entire life and says he barely moved. He just moved to Odessa a few months ago. "All my family is from there," he shared. "Fort Stockton taught me to never think about yourself in situations like that. Always be willing to give a helping hand." Yet another school bond. I see that Fort Stockton ISD is again discussing another large school bond. Liberals never learn. The school bond was defeated in recently, and I hope and pray it will fail again. Do you believe the bureaucrats when they say taxes will not go up? Why don't they at least wait until 2024, when I hope we elect a pro-oil capitalist president? This present administration in D.C. hates oil, and its hundreds of byproducts are evil. Oil has built West Texas. Someone has to pay these millions upon millions dollar bonds. Now is not the right time to put Fort Stockton into deeper debt. Ronald Reagan said, and I paraphrase, "When liberals say I'm here from the government and I'm here to help you, run." Signed, George Pitts, Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, August 18th. School reneges on fencing plan, wants MEDC to fill gap. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Monday, members of the Monahans Economic Development Board considered approving a revised bid package to fence the detention pond near Parkway Elementary from Odessa Fence. School officials announced in late July that Parkway Elementary would not open for the fall semester, but rather in the spring semester due to safety concerns related to the fence, as well as other safety issues. Quote, "The plans we initially received from the school showed a 6-foot fence already in place on the north side of the detention pond. So when our engineer created plans to seek bids, it did not include that small section of fence. It was just connecting to their fence. Now we're being told the school never had any intention of putting a fence there, therefore leaving MEDC to fence the entire pond," MEDC Director Ashley Adalto said. During the last MEDC meeting, the board approved a single bid for its part of the fence from Odessa Fence for around $216,000. Quote, "We received a revised bid from Odessa Fence, which includes the 6-foot fence originally on the school plans, which adds a little over $6,000 to the original bid," Adalto said. Board member Richard Irwin asked, "Why does this fall back to us?" City manager Rex Thee answered by saying, quote, "If someone goes off into the detention pond due to a lack of protection, or if a kid goes off into the pond because it is an attractive nuisance, everyone will get sued. And it's not whether you get sued, it's if you win or not," end quote. Quote, "What is wrong with us telling the school, we'll see who has to pay if something happens. You reach a point where you have to say, we're not going to do this because we've been doing it all," board member Hal Upchurch said. Adalto added she had emails to and from the school which also stated the school would provide that small section of fencing. Quote, "Their original plan was to do a chain-link 7-foot fence with 3 barbed wire strands all the way around the fence, which is where the original contention came in because they weren't willing to build a proper fence," Thee said. "The section of fence is located on the boundary line between the gifted land to school and the city-owned detention pond, but Thee said, quote, "Once the fence is on it, it would be solely city property. My personal opinion is to build the fence MEDC is requested to build on the street side, and if the school wants to leave a $6,000 gap on their side, then leave it there," Thee said. The question remained who would be liable if the gap was left open. Quote, "I think we just tell them no, and they might be persuaded to just put the fence up," Upchurch said. Mayor Adam Steen said, quote, "If the rest of the pond is fenced and the only access is through the school's property, they would be liable to put a fence there. Hold them accountable," end quote. Quote, "Should we fight the school on this for $6,000? Is it worth it? I don't know what we're dealing with on that side of the ballgame," Irwin said. Quote, "I know how much my taxes have gone up paying for this new school, so they can pay $6,000 for a fence as far as I'm concerned," Steen said. Thee added, quote, "In the long run, and the relationship we and the school and the county have had for years, which is better than it used to be, I suggest just getting the fence done and let them put that $6,000 in the gymnasium floor or something," end quote. Quote, "We've been doing that during the entire construction. When does it end?" Steen added, quote, "We have to hold them accountable at some point, and if a $6,000 fence breaks the relationship, there wasn't much of a relationship to begin with," end quote. Quote, "Especially a $6,000 fence they agreed to build," Upchurch said. Board President Brian Franks suggested the group table the issue and instead speak with the school and explain MEDC is covering 80% of the fence to zero cost to the school and ask if they will put up the section of fence they agreed to. Quote, I agree with that because I think we're getting taken on this deal. Something just doesn't seem right about it. End quote. The revised bid was tabled until the engineering company can speak with the school on the fence. In other business, the board approved a bid from Daniel Meza for creating a sidewalk around the detention pond near the new school. Quote, City ordinance states property along a city street needs a sidewalk, so the bid is for sidewalk on 12th Street and East Monahans Parkway, Adalto said. Meza's bid came in at $35,500. The only other bid submitted was from Rubio's Paving, which totaled $54,000. In the final actionable item, the board approved a release of lien from CTHR Ventures, LLC. The action releases the lien held by MEDC for lots 29 through 32 Southland Edition, otherwise known as 8th and Main Street location, for the future home of an HTO, which is set to open on Friday, August 19th. The board also approved presenting CHTR Ventures, LLC, with a certificate of appreciation. In regular business, the financial report, reflecting a balance of $2.4 million in available funds, and minutes of the July 21st regular meeting were approved. Directors present were Brian Franks, Richard Irwin, and Hal Upchurch. Members Leticia Rodriguez and Kathy Anthony were absent. Long-awaited rain arrives. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Monahan's residents woke up Tuesday morning to a welcome sight of light rain and cool temperatures. Quote, We have a low-pressure system over the area, and it will bring various amounts of rain to the West Texas area, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration weather forecaster Douglas Kane said. The system, which originated in the Gulf of Mexico, has drifted northwest and is hugging the east side of the Davis Mountain chain, giving the Monahans area a 40% chance of rain for Tuesday, with rain chances dropping to 20% for Tuesday night and Wednesday. Quote, Rain chances will increase again on Thursday because of a weak cold front passing through West Texas, giving a 40% chance of rain and temperatures in the lower 90s, Kane said. The low-pressure system dumped up to 6 inches in Dryden. At Persimmon Gap, the entrance gate to the Big Bend National Park, rain measured almost 1 inch. Other recorded rainfall amounts around the West Texas area include Marfa at 1.5 inches, Alpine measured a little over 2 inches, and the Davis Mountain Wildlife Preserve, 25 miles northwest of Fort Davis, received over 2 inches of rain. Rain continued throughout the day on Tuesday from a light sprinkle to coming down heavily at some points. Rain chances are in the forecast for the next week, ranging from 14% to 57%, with daytime temperatures hovering around 90 degrees. Jackson arrested after meth found in car, home. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Thorntonville man is currently in jail after deputies with the Ward County Sheriff's Office found methamphetamines in his car and his home and located a stolen firearm early Friday morning. Quote, On August 12th, at approximately 12:30 a.m., Ward County Sheriff's Office deputies conducted a traffic stop in the 800 block of West 2nd Street in Monahans on a black sport utility vehicle. Deputies identified the driver as Carl Wayne Jackson, age 47, of 2307 West 3rd Street, Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle said. Jackson was arrested during the traffic stop on an outstanding Ward County warrant for manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance penalty group 1, more than 1 gram, less than 4 grams, a second-degree felony. Quote, the warrant is from an ongoing investigation from the Ward County Sheriff's Office, Faye added. During the traffic stop, sheriff's deputies conducted a search of the vehicle and found over 27 grams of a crystalline substance believed to be methamphetamine inside the vehicle. Jackson was later charged with possession of controlled substance, penalty group 1, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony. During the course of this investigation, a search warrant was obtained for Jackson's residence in Thorntonville. Quote, during the search of the home, deputies recovered a stolen firearm from the residence and a crystalline substance believed to be methamphetamine that were packaged for individual sale, Faye said. Jackson was also charged with abandoning endangering a child, a state jail felony, because at the time of the search warrant was executed, a child under 15 years of age was in the home. This case is still an ongoing investigation and pending additional charges. Bond for Jackson was set at $20,000 for the manufacture or delivery charge, $10,000 for the abandoning endangering a child charge, and $15,000 for the possession of controlled substance charge. Jackson remains in custody in lieu of posting the $45,000 bond. Stolen merchandise linked to Tiefer Teller. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Main Street Market employee was arrested last Monday after allegedly stealing merchandise from a convenience store. On July 26, at approximately 3 p.m., Ward County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to a disturbance at Main Street Market, located at Interstate 20 and FM 1219 in Wickett. Quote, deputies met with loss prevention personnel for the store. It was discovered an employee, Brooke Duran Tiefer Teller, age 47, of Wickett, had stolen approximately $3,000 in merchandise from the store, Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle said. Deputies obtained an arrest warrant for Tiefer Teller for theft of property more than $2,500, less than $30,000, a state jail felony. Tiefer Teller was arrested on the outstanding warrant and taken to Ward County Jail. His bond was set at $7,500. Tiefer Teller posted the bond and was released on August 14th. Diabetes seminar set for August 23rd. More than 2.6 million Texans, or 12% of the adult population, are diagnosed with diabetes. Additionally, an estimated 620,000 people in Texas are thought to have diabetes but do not know it, significantly increasing their health risks. Concerned about community awareness, Ward Memorial Hospital is partnering with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension to host Do Well, Be Well, an educational seminar discussing the state of diabetes in Texas on August 23rd in Monahans. This upcoming free seminar will share facts about diabetes from experts and professional educators. Additionally, attendees will learn how to make key changes to their lifestyle to curb risks or effects of type 2 diabetes, meet others who share the same concerns, and, more importantly, can ask questions. Quote, we continue to be alarmed by the number of Texans affected by diabetes, says Hiten A. Tang, M.D., board certified in internal medicine at Sand Hills Family Clinic, a service of Ward Memorial Hospital. Quote, education remains one of the best ways to take control of your health, and I know local residents will have a lot to gain if they attend this special program on type 2 diabetes, end quote. Diabetes is a disease that causes the pancreas to alter the production of insulin, an important hormone that converts sugar and starches into energy the body needs. If the pancreas cannot produce enough insulin, the amount of sugar in the blood rises uncontrollably, causing a deadly health risk. According to the American Diabetes Association, there are three common types of diabetes: type 1, type 2, and gestational. Type 2 diabetes is the most common form, where the body does not produce enough insulin or the cells ignore the insulin produced, causing health issues and even death. Among the ways individuals can be screened for diabetes is a series of lab work. To learn more about the current state of type 2 diabetes, plan to attend the Do Well, Be Well program on type 2 diabetes on August 23rd in the boardroom at Ward Memorial Hospital. The event will begin at 5:30 p.m. The session is free to attend, but space is limited and expected to reach capacity. Interested individuals are encouraged to register as soon as possible by calling Haley Lacaz at 432-943-2682 or emailing haley.lacaz@ag.tamu.edu. To learn more about local healthcare programs and services, or to find a local medical provider, please visit www.ward-memorial.com.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.